Good evening, everybody. Welcome to this week's installment of Substance Use and Abuse in Judaism. Today, we're going to be exploring tobacco, one of the most well-known and frequently used of substances. In fact, as Post mentioned, alcohol last week. So we discussed, you know, some of the risks and dangers of alcohol as well as potential benefits. But as far as frequency of usage, I would argue that tobacco, I mean, the statistics are quite clear that tobacco is much higher in terms of usage, because as by nature of the usage of smoking and tobacco and due to the addiction of nicotine, it ends up being done not just, you know, oh, you know, drink a day. It's more like a smoke an hour. So it ends up being, you know, a much more frequent type of usage, as well as which much more harmful effects. Before we get to that, let's start with a little bit of talking about the history of tobacco. At any point, if anybody has any questions, feel free to call out and let me know that you have something to add. So just in terms of the general order of what we're going to go into, so we're going to start by discussing a little bit about the history of tobacco. Then we're going to go into the dangers involved in tobacco. Yeah, not a full extensive list because I'm not a medical doctor, but always good to mention. Then we will talk about the reasons why people end up using tobacco before going into the halakhic discussion of whether or not it is prohibited or not to smoke, and some of the history behind that as well. So in regards to the history of tobacco use, so it's actually a relatively new drug, meaning at least in terms of in the Western mind. So it had been used for as far as we can tell, for millennia in North America, being used by the ancient Mayans and other cultures, again, but the exact age of when it was discovered is unclear. We only found out in the West in the 16th century after we discovered the Americas. And then it quickly rose to prominence as a drug of choice in terms of frequency of usage, et cetera, both due to various factors such as intensive marketing campaigns, misinformation, and downright lies. By the tobacco manufacturers, the fact that it was easily grown in many parts of the world and is a pretty, the tobacco plant being being relatively robust, made it both a good cash crop as well as something that ended up, again, in turn being promoted endlessly for quite a while. In fact, by the time we reached the 1950s, 50% of all adults in North America were smoking. As far as worldwide, we don't have to say all the statistics, but America kept a pretty good job of it. So it was over 50% at the time. So now that we have a little bit about the history of it, again, if you want to see more in terms of the types of advertisements, et cetera, I highly recommend taking a look. But bear in mind, this is a very long and deep rabbit hole on the internet. But there are quite a few of shows of advertisements. So, but as far as before we go further, I can't, talk about smoking without talking about the potential negative effects. So here you see the Surgeon General warning that is found on many cigarettes in the United States of America. The first of its kind, was telling you not to smoke because it can directly cause lung cancer, heart disease, emphysema, as well as cause complications for pregnancy, in addition to a whole bunch of other things, such as the many other health effects, clogging of arteries, shortness of breath, increase of every type of infection involving the lungs. The list goes on and on. Also, the choice of the color scheme for the slide is based on that being the effect of the previously white walls or white teeth in face of excessive smoking. They tend to yellow. So if you're interested in more on the health, on the negative effects of smoking, please see Cam Health, the Canadian Association. On Cam Health, CAMH.ca. If you'd like to, they have excellent information there. That in regards to history of tobacco as well as its dangers. Also, figure may as well mention it now before I forget that if somebody knows somebody who's interested in helping to work on needing help with any sort of addiction, please feel free to reach out to Jax. which hopefully is familiar here, but if not, they'll be featured prominently on the addiction panel we'll be having on the Sunday before Purim. So again, feel free to, for more information, please look toward those sources. But now back to our discussion. Now that, the question is, so why would somebody start smoking? So I know there are people here who in the past have smoked. We have the people who know people who have smoked. So why would somebody start smoking? So the most frequent reason why people start smoking is quite simple. It's based on societal pressures, right? So that can be because of, because of advertisement that we mentioned earlier, could be because it's something that's considered to be cool that you may have seen in TV or movies or elsewhere. Could also be because simply, your friend offers you one, then you decide you may as well try it. They're all hanging out, seemingly having fun while they're on their smoke break, so if you're going to give it a try. And of course, that ends up being pretty bad. And also reason why most people who end up start smoking in their early teenage years, between the ages of 12 and 15. Also, some people start smoking because they're trying to control other prohibited urges, as in, let's say, for whatever reason, they are, an insert urge that you tried to avoid, but by smoking, it allows you to not do so. Let's say if you, a classic example in terms of, smoking for use as an aid for focusing, which is why it becomes quite prevalent in the army, in both in Israel and in the United States. Just going back to, for several hundred years, because it simply served perceived to sharpen one's senses. But also used again, which we'll discuss later in terms of trading vices.
Izzy. It inhibits food eating.
Right. It inhibits food eating. So say if you're really hungry and you don't have, you're carrying a pack of cigs. So then it would allow you to not have to, go out and buy something. So you could simply have a smoke and, wait till, you actually finished your workday. So that it also serves as, which also again, why it became very prevalent in terms of usage in the army when you are, let's say, for many times on patrol for long hours and you don't have to, you can't necessarily eat, but you could probably smoke while doing so. For more examples of that, please watch any movie dated before the 1970s and you will see that. Meaning whether that be in terms of the place when the movie occurred or just in terms of when it was made. So, and also another reason why people are smoking is generally because they're currently addicted, not necessarily because they started for any particular reason, but once you got started, it is very, very difficult to stop, right? That is based on the nicotine in content of tobacco. And therefore, whether you're referring to smoking, chewing, or any other form of imbibing of tobacco, it can very easily lead to that. So now that we've mentioned that, so let's discuss, so why shouldn't one smoke, right? So relatively obvious answer is because it's bad for your health and you shouldn't do things that are bad for your health. But that isn't necessary. So then the question is, so we understand that on a common sense level, but on a halakhic level, what does that mean? So the way it's typically categorized is why you shouldn't is based on the category of inflicting harm against oneself, right? Generally, you're not allowed to harm oneself. And therefore, if you were to harm oneself, you would be in violation. You'd be in violation, therefore you shouldn't be smoking because you're, by doing so, you're hurting yourself. But to that effect, so then if for the source of that being halakha, so again, it is a straightforward Mishnah in Bava Kamma, in the meaning which is the in the Mishnah there, stating, talking about the laws of damages, or Rabbi Akiva states that it is, even though it's prohibited to injure oneself, you won't be exempt from payment. So true, you don't have to pay anybody if you hurt yourself, but you shouldn't be doing that. Again, in the Gemara afterwards continues and offers several options of based on which verse it is, such as the verse of by why we're not supposed to murder, as comes up by Noah, right? That you're not supposed to end up killing people, because if you do, your blood will end up being avenged. And then the more commonly quoted ones is based on a pasuk in Devarim. We'll take a greater close look at them in a little bit. Of saying that you have to v'nishmar dam ma'od nafshotechem, you have to very much guard your life. And similarly, again, in the same paragraph in Devarim, that of Raki Shemei Lachash Warn of Shecha, guard yourself and guard your soul, which are often used by the Rambam for it to explain why you're not allowed to injure oneself. Of course, there's also the general thought process that goes along with kind of the Baal Tashkir, not being wasteful, is it's simply common sense. That you don't necessarily need a particular prohibition against harming oneself because it's kind of the, you know, basic instinct, fact of life, you shouldn't do so. So, yes, there are times when you are allowed to inflict injury, contrasting to, let's say, if there's a reason why you need to be injured, let's say, for towards another effect, but to simply harm myself for no reason, that would not be permissible. So there's another issue that comes up with smoking, namely that of secondhand smoke. So even if you were to be allowed, let's say, to, you know, if it was permitted to endanger oneself, so the same thing would not apply if there's anybody else around you. So that leads to the issue of the prohibition of damaging others, right, which is part of being a good neighbor. For more on that, I highly recommend there's a Yarchei Kol that's coming Monday with Beit Midrash Sifron Dov in person. If you'd like to join, we'll be discussing the concept of noisy neighbors, which we've been learning all year on Fridays. But point being is that the discussion is in terms of laws of neighbors. You can't do things that bother your neighbor, even if it's not necessarily that's like directly harmful, hurting them. But even let's say it's, you know, if it's irritating, or if it can potentially infringe upon their usage rights, that's a problem. So secondhand smoke, as I'm sure many people here have experienced, somebody's not a smoker, it makes them, you know, they start coughing. It's very irritating. And not that that's before we get to the fact that there's also, again, data shows that secondhand smoke also kills people in the long term. So that's something else to bear in mind, as well as the problem of lifnei iver, placing a stumbling block in front of others, because if you are creating a hazard and nobody else, before somebody else is not aware that it's currently there, then they will in turn be damaged by your actions. So those are some of the prohibitions that can be involved with smoking. But as a question that I've frequently heard, unfortunately, is, well, if that's the case, then why do we see religious people smoking? Right? I'm sure this is probably a question on many people's minds, right? Why does it seem to be that seemingly otherwise religious people, they're smoking? So how is that possible? How, what, where, why, and how is that? So
also, again, I mean, Rita went through a lot. Look what that guy did to her, that I forget his name, the one who let her go because she was older.
Okay. Not sure that was okay. Anyhow, back to the discussion. Right. So why do we see religious people smoking? So one factor is, there is always a question of socioeconomic factors, which is a little bit beyond my degree of expertise to discuss the sociology of why certain activities are prohibited in certain cultures. But that might be part of it. But then the question is, well, if we claim to promote a society that is interested in following halakha, then how could you potentially justify doing so? So one of the ways is the idea is it's only a dangerous activity, right? It's similar to, let's say, maybe it's dangerous to drive a car. It's dangerous to, but it's like we do it, and that therefore it's going to be fine. So first thing is the question of should we be engaging any dangerous activities to begin with? So this, this most frequently comes up. It's quoted both. So here I have a quote for you in English, based on the Rambam, also quoted at the end of Choshen Mishpat, laws of punitive damages, in the Shulchan Aruch, right, the law code of Rabbi Yosef Cairo. So here the Rambam, again, because his formulation ended up being the basis for the Shulchan Aruch in this regards. So I figure we should take a look. So there's a biblical commandment to put a fence around one's roof so one doesn't fall off. And so the Rambam, after stating that, mentions, goes on a little bit of exposition. He explains that the roof is like every other thing that has danger in itself, in which it's possible that a person will make a mistake with it and die. An example of having a pit on property, right? Something can fall in, right? Or you have to make sure there's a wall around it or cover it so the person won't fall in and die. And so too, any stumbling block in which there's danger to life. It is a positive mitzvah to remove it, to guard against it, to be exceedingly cautious about it, as is written, as we said before. If based on Pasuk and Dvarim. Or Rishi Martin Malo Nosho Dechem. And if one has not removed the stumbling blocks and brings people to danger, one has canceled the Pasuk commandment and transgressed, do not bring blood guilt. Our sages forbade many manners because they involved a threat to life. Whenever a person transgresses these guidelines, saying, I will risk my life, what does this matter to others? Or I am not careful about these things. He should be punished by stripes for rebelliousness. So in case somebody was thinking, oh, it's not so bad, you know, it's just taking a risk. But again, deliberately doing something that is dangerous, that will lead to harm, is considered to be punishable by Makot, meaning that the rabbinical court, again, when rabbinical court had the power to do so, would have flogged you and given you lashes for doing so. So on the other hand, there is such a thing as, well, there are a certain degree of acceptable danger, such as going on boats. Right, let's say, you know, we travel, right? That does a degree of risk. In fact, there's a bracha that said when you're done with it. But there, bear in mind, that's generally not simply doing so for no reason. In the ancient times, traveling boat was dangerous. But again, that was generally, you didn't do it simply to, you know, have fun. You did it because you had to, because of business reasons. And it wasn't simply done for the sake of enjoyment. It was done for the sake of making a living. And many people actually did it. So to say that it was actually a dangerous activity when it is an entire industry of people doing is a little bit harder to say. But we'll come back to this in a little bit as far as whether or not what's considered to be a dangerous activity or considered to be injuring oneself. So before we get into that, right? So let's go to it again. If it's dangerous, why do people smoke? Right? Generally, we wouldn't take, you know, most individuals wouldn't on a daily basis engage in dangerous activities, right? You wouldn't, you know, be standing over a cliff edge looking over every day, just, you know, just the fun of it, right? Most people wouldn't climb up on the roofs without, if there's no fence around it, just for fun. So why do we quite frequently see people doing, you know, smoking for a sense of enjoyment? So that some of the arguments that you may have heard are as follows, and we'll go explain where they're from afterwards. So one is that's not that dangerous, and Shomer Petem Hashem, that God watches over the simple or the fools based on Pasuk and Tehillim. So therefore, they're like, look, it's not that dangerous. It's going to be okay. Another one is, people say, look, I know great rabbis who used to smoke. I know of some other rabbis who still do smoke. So what are you telling me that you can't smoke? The rabbi does it. Why, you know, I know you have that opinion. The other rabbi says otherwise. I don't need to listen to you. So another one is that you're already addicted, and therefore it's considered to be onus under duress, and therefore it's like, I can't, right? Once somebody happens to start smoking, therefore they're like, I just can't stop. Again, as far as if somebody actually does struggle with addictions, that is beyond the scope of today's lecture. If you know somebody who is, again, please be in touch with Jax or other organizations to be able to help with better helps that individual. Another reasoning that I've heard is, why do they smoke? Because I had a choice. I could have got hooked on heroin, or I could have gotten hooked on tobacco. So I chose tobacco, which is a very troubling statement, which seems to fly in the face of a lot of things, which we will, again, we'll discuss that later as well, hopefully. And last but not least, the reason that I've heard is because, well, I mean, generally people don't understand statistics. I think that it's fine. Everybody in the world is obviously a statistician with advanced degrees and, you know, professional actuary, knowing exactly the odds of what they currently do will lead to their death or not. And they're completely understanding and aware of the likelihood of death of a given activity, and therefore they choose to do so. So last one is a slight bit of a joke, but unfortunately, based on the current way that people respond to medical data in the light of the pandemic, I can't not have that on the list. Right? A lot of people will, you know, in the face of, again, overwhelming statistical evidence, still choose to turn another way. And to argue with that is a very much an uphill battle. So let's start with the fact of the matter is that I have to admit that a lot of the reasoning that people are throwing out that we just said is actually first put forth by Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein was the Gadol Dor in America in the mid 20th century, and he had a response about anything and everything. So here is this is the entirety of the truth. It's a very short responsa written in 1964 about the question of, are you allowed to smoke? And this is what he had to say. So in regards to smoking cigarettes, certainly since there is a chance of getting sick because of it, one is recommended to refrain from doing so. But to say that it is prohibited from the prohibition of a dangerous practice, since many have trampled over it, as is mentioned in the Gemara Shabbat and the Nidah, and specifically when many Torah giants generations past and over generations smoke, and consequently, even those who are stringent about the dangers, there would be no prohibition of placing a stumbling block before the blind person by offering a light or matches to a smoker. So, right. So as we see here, we see a lot of the justifications that people that I quote on the previous slide. These are actually put forth by Rav Moshe Feinstein. So, right. But the first thing that's important to note is that is Rav Moshe Feinstein a fan of smoking? Like, would he recommend somebody to smoke?
No, but I would also suggest that we might know a bit more than 60 years ago.
Yes.
And in the 1960s, the cigarette companies were denying that they were causing any damage.
Excellent point, Mark. Thank you. Right? So then, again, yeah, also important to remember, this is 1964. Right.
Can I?
Tobacco. Yeah.
Show you an ad from. But I just found this.
One second. Let me spotlight you so everybody can see it.
I don't know. Can you?
Pull back a little bit.
Rick, can you see it?
Yeah. The big clean taste of tobacco, of top tobacco end to end. Every puff softened by top porosity paper. Does it have a year on it?
I can tell you. 1960,
right. So the 1960s there actually was a feature of people starting to them pretending that they're cleaner. Right.
And also there were ads, like 9 out of 10 doctors smoke Chesterfield or something.
Mm-hmm. I was looking for that one, but I couldn't find it.
So step back in the history of it. So important to note that if you were to go back a century and you were, I mean, not quite a century even, right? Early 1920s, 1930s, let's say you were in Lakewood, you were in Punovich, you were in, again, insert name of a big yeshiva. Guess what? What do they have attached to the average, you know, to their shtenders?
Let me share my screen.
Okay. Allow to share screen. There we go. Go for it. Go for it, Izzy.
I'm looking for, there it is.
Here we go. So which ad in particular are you drawing our attention to?
All of them. They're all health ones.
Right.
Hold on a sec. Let me get.
Right. This was after the initial study started coming out that it's bad, then we started having the tobacco companies paying off doctors to promote these things. So just in terms of taking a step back, that at one point on no basis, people started recommending that, again, in the 1800s already, that they were recommending that medicine, that smoking was beneficial to your health, right? 1800s, right? Even though in the 1700s, they already started having studies that it was bad for your health. But anyhow, that began to be the case. I'll need somebody to raise their hand. So again, just one second, let me just finish this point. Then please ask your question. So again, there was a history of it being medically allowed. Then all of a sudden, medicine started figuring things out that it's not. But before, you know, that fully got sorted out, it had already gained extreme degree of acceptance and prevalence throughout the world. And there was, some of the first questions that came up in regards to smoking weren't, is it allowed or not allowed? It was, from a health perspective, it was, am I allowed to smoke on Yom Tov, right? And then, because, you know, oh, it's a fire, but is it really? Am I allowed to smoke while I'm davening? Am I allowed to smoke in shul, right? Those were the first types of questions that came up, as opposed to the question of, is this necessarily bad for my health? It used to be an entirely different question in terms of, is it, you know, respectful or bothersome? Which eventually, and again, so that was, there was a huge range of the questions as time went on. So that, therefore, that's important to note that, again, 100 years ago, if you were in a yeshiva, you would probably have been met with a plume of smoke right when you walked in, like hanging over there, like blue, you know, or again, depending on what color they colored their smoke, you know, depending on what the popular brand yeshiva was, right? That would have been in the yeshiva itself. Nowadays, many yeshiva guys smoke, but if you were to have smoke in the yeshiva, you would be asked to leave, to, you know, you would not be allowed to smoke inside of the yeshiva. Also, okay, so now that I mentioned that point,
Hi. Yeah, it's interesting how it's connected to Jewish history. I read that Freud's nephew got like a campaign to get women to smoke, and then women started smoking. And then about 70 years ago, my grandmother was giving birth. The doctors recommended that she smoke for postpartum, like to relieve the stress. And actually, it does relieve stress. So they were right about that. They just didn't know it destroys your lungs.
Right. So there was a lot of misinformation going on that led to a lot of bad consequences, unfortunately. Thank you for that. Yeah, it's just like it was a whole giant mess. So that's why an important thing with again to clarify is what is the reality before you actually can make a halakhic decision or any decision. You need to make sure that your facts are correct, because if I decided that something is, you know, recommended activity when I don't understand the science behind it, is simply a, just like you wouldn't want to, you know, make an investment of tons of money only to find out that they're trying to sell you a bridge, which is actually the Brooklyn Bridge, which is definitely not for sale, right? So you don't want that to happen. Also, in regards to if you're trying to make any evaluation in a similar fashion, you want to make sure that you have all your facts straight. So, right. So Rabosh finds at the time. So again, there was the beginning of the facts. So that's why he's saying it's dangerous, but he wasn't necessarily as concerned. Yes.
Sorry, you have to share your screen again.
I am, don't worry. I haven't started reading anything yet, so I was just keeping it off while I was monologuing. So, apologies. Back to the screen and the sources. So this is Moshe Feinstein's Tshuva, 1964. Okay? That number is important because in 1967 was when the Surgeon General's warning started getting slapped on every single cigarette, and also when lawsuits were being placed leveled against the tobacco companies for their doing false advertising and lying repeatedly. But doesn't mean that, yeah, for more on that, that's a good fun historical point. Again, if you want to look at the history of tobacco, there are plenty of books and fun articles on it. But before we do that, so let's, again, we had mentioned these five reasons. So let's go, so now let's try and knock down each of these reasons. So again, Moshe Feinstein had thought this as well, but again, people since him have argued against him. And also worthy of note, mentioned again at the end, there's currently no post-sec that I have heard of, currently still alive, and who is aware of the danger of smoking that actually says that you are allowed to smoke. So if somebody has heard of one, I'm interested in knowing who that person is, but I have not met anybody saying it since in the last 40 years stating that it is fine to smoke. Some have stopped short of saying it's, you know, like, again, the question of what level of prohibition is it? Is it, you know, a biblical prohibition because you're damaging yourself? Is it only rabbinic? Or is it somewhere kind of in between gray area that you shouldn't do, not recommended, like Ramosh Fine said here? But again, no, saying that it's fine to smoke, I have yet to meet the or hear of that idea coming forth in the last 40 years. So as far as why that isn't the case, so important to point some certain landmark tshuvas, such as the tshuva of Rav Eliezer Waldenberg. Rav Eliezer Waldenberg was a posek in Eretz Yisrael, was known as the rabbi of Shari Tzedek.
Rabbi Metzger, I will just add, because you asked if there's a rabbi that says, good that I'm interrupting, if there's a rabbi that says that it's fine to smoke. I don't know someone who says that permits to smoke, but there are opinions, and I can send it later, of rabbis that say that if you already started to smoke, then you don't have a mitzvah, or you don't have a chiyuv to stop smoking, okay. First of all. Second of all, depends on your age. If you're, the more, I would say, old you are, the more approval you have halachically to do that.
Okay, right. So to address Idan's point, in 1981, Ramosha Feinstein wrote a tshuva where he stated that you can't, that it is prohibited to start smoking, but if you're currently addicted, that it wouldn't necessarily be prohibited. Okay, so that is an opinion that somebody's addicted, but the issue is that that would only apply for somebody who had started smoking prior to, you know, at that time when Moshe Feinstein said it, which is the main opinion that gets quoted in regards to that. Moshe Feinstein said that in 1981, that if you're currently addicted, maybe you don't have to stop, but there are many others since who said that you should stop, such as Ravad Yosef, Zatzal, Rabbi Weiss, and many others, and also Waldenberg, which is what we'll see as to why. Right? So there are those who say that once you're addicted, you don't necessarily have to stop. But again, we'll get to why even that you're addicted isn't necessarily a good excuse either. We'll see that as well. So as far as, again, we mentioned the fact that, you know, oh, it's unlikely and God will, you know, it's not such a likely, such dangerous thing, and God will protect. I don't need to worry about it. Just like I'm not worried about being struck by lightning when I step out my door, I don't need to be worried about this either. So to that, so here's the sisters of Eliezer Waldenberg, right? So then again, we're writing this in 1982. So again, so there's a much longer tshuva where he goes through explaining the dangers behind it, as well as explaining he's the one who popularized the phrase "v'nishmarta me'od nafshotechem," you should very much guard your life, and use that as the battle cry against smoking. That was Waldenberg. So right, so he was very, very strong and hardline against it. So here's again, this is an excerpt from that tshuva, just relating to the question of the level of danger rose to say that we can no longer apply the God will protect us from the random chances and events. It's clear without a shadow of a doubt that there is no place to bless it in your heart and instruct that since smoke is a path trodden by many, and if so, we can apply the phrase that it is now path well trodden, and we can employ that God protects the fools. Right, so the Hebrew is dashu barabim, right? Again, once enough people do it, then true, you know, getting in a car is technically getting into a, you know, a machine that is currently having controlled explosions at every moment in order for you to move forward. But we still, you know, nobody's afraid of getting into their car because of that, right? We all get into our cars. We know it's controlled explosions based on highly inflammable gases, but we're all fine with that, right? So again, So people say that, again, once everybody's doing it, then therefore it's considered to be fine. Well, the question is, when are you allowed to apply that? So here, Waldenberg explains that because meaning Chazal, did not say such, except in cases where it is not revealed what happened and reality hasn't shown the opposite. All the cases that the Gemara brings of Shomer P'tam Hashem, that God will protect the fools, God will protect, you know, in the just in case, those were all cases where there wasn't causal effect proven, where we didn't know that A led to B. And maybe it is, maybe it's not, I don't know. But that's what's happening here. But in our case, before us, where over the last several decades, in light of various scientific and medical research, has revealed alarming measures of damage to the body that are far greater and more dangerous than just the smoke itself causes, then this knowledge has gone out and entered the nature of the world to the extent that many great and strong nations have made laws about needing to declare a warning on each pack of cigarettes saying the Surgeon General warns against smoking and smoking dangers and hurts people. Again, I showed earlier, we saw that of the one in America. Again, as sad as it is to say, Israel only actually got that warning 2 years ago. Thank you, you neglect for pushing it forward. But it took, Israel only caught on 2 years ago. So this is him saying this 40 years ago, that many great nations, referring to, you know, America and Europe, they clearly recognized and took steps. And if so, certainly it is obviously absurd to turn our eyes away from all this and exempt ourselves by candidly saying this too applies to God protects the fool. Right? The idea of saying that God will protect us from a random chance that you can't possibly expect is different than when you see in front of your eyes somebody currently suffering and in pain because of said action that they have done. Right? Most people here will have know somebody who has. Who has experienced it, or either themselves the pain of smoking, or somebody who they know who passed away from cancer, lung, or of some sort, directly caused by smoking. In fact, statistics show that 20% of deaths in Canada are 17% are caused find some facts related to smoking, right? Even now that, you know, nowadays we are, you know, again, the degree of smoking in Canada is far lower than it was half a century ago. That's still a statistic that is one of the leading causes of death in Canada. So as far as could we say rely on the fact that God will protect us from random chances, Rav Oldenburg is clearly stating that this is not a case of random chance. This is a clear case of danger and damage being done to you. You cannot pretend that this is simply like the question of maybe or may not you get injured, because it's not that you may or may not get injured. It's that you are currently being injured. The question is, will this injury end up, you know, will it necessarily kill you? Is a separate thing. You're definitely being injured, and it definitely is bad, and therefore is not protected by under the idea of Shomer B'Tayim Hashem. The next question is that was brought up is the idea of, but our rabbis used to do it, right? I know of some rabbis who still do. So the issue with that is that idea in Hebrew would be called Ein Motzim Laz Al Rishonim. We don't badmouth the earlier generations. So, but when does that generally come up, and when is that quoted? So we have the Pitkei Teshuva stating that. When do you say that? We only say that in the case of why. Let's say if we have a new chumrah in regards to Hilchot Gittin, the way that we write our divorce contracts. That therefore we shouldn't say that, oh, but they didn't use to do it, therefore that, you know, and therefore say that, you know, let's say somebody who got divorced, you know, a generation or two ago, that therefore their divorce wasn't good. No, so that might only be in regards to a stringency, right? If it's a chumrah ba'alma, right? Not a mikara din damage, but it's a chumrah, right? Why weren't they machmir about this, or when we currently are stringent about this? Insert name of chumrah here. That's beyond the scope of today's issue to discuss that. But like, you know, let me give an easy example. Nowadays, we insert your own chumrah here, because otherwise everyone else will have to explain the entirety behind it. And in interest of time, we'll leave it at that. But there's also the idea that maybe this idea of Ein Motzim Laz might only apply to cases relating to marriage. Because again, if you uproot somebody's marriage and say the way they used to do the marriage wasn't good, then you're creating a whole bunch of other halachic problems. And in that regard, you shouldn't do it. But in general, but otherwise, it's only in regards to when it is said in a mean, disparaging way, and that will end up leading to bad halachic ramifications. But that wouldn't apply here, because we don't say anything bad about the previous generations. It's just as simple as they didn't know. Right, so you can't blame somebody for doing something when they had no knowledge of it. Right, the case of Tinok Shenishba, right, the child who was raised in captivity and never heard about laws. They never heard of the term what Shabbos is. You can't blame the individual never heard of what the law is to expect to observe the law. But let's say, but isn't now that we have heard about it, you can no longer apply that anymore. And similarly, if you were to say that, you know, they didn't know, the answer is like people kind of did know. With the Chavetz Chaim, who passed away in the 1930s, so again, almost a century ago, long before Moshe Feinstein, which we'll see his quote from him in a little bit about smoking not being a good thing to do. And also the fact is, anybody here heard of Honus Wagner, any chance? The most expensive Honus Wagner, baseball player in the early turn of the 20th century, right? Late 1800s into early 1900s, played for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Doesn't matter. Whatever. Anyhow, point being that he was a Hall of Famer. He has the single most valuable baseball card. Why does he have the single most valuable baseball card? Because baseball cards 100 or so years ago were given out as a advertising scheme to encourage you to get cigarettes. And Honus Wagner knew that those who smoked, it affected their health. They were no longer quite as healthy. They couldn't run as fast. They got tired more frequently. So he said, when he heard that they were producing his likeness, he went to the factory and told them to shut it down. And anyone that he could find, he burned. So anyone's of his baseball card were contraband copies that shouldn't have existed. So hence why any one of those is worth a significant amount of money. But again, that was well over 100 years ago. So again, data has been, and as I mentioned earlier, there were studies in the 1700s already by doctors noting that there were certain detrimental effects from smoking, but they were, again, nowhere near extensively as they are now. But again, to say that you didn't know there was any danger, it's a little bit of willful ignorance. But again, because that was, again, as we saw from the, thank you to everybody for sharing those medical ads saying how it's you know, smoking safe, right? That there was a lot of misinformation. Therefore, it's not fair to judge somebody who didn't know better. But of course, nowadays, that wouldn't necessarily be fair because, well, for, you know, majority of everybody here's lifetimes, it has been a known fact. For majority of everybody here's lifetimes, or if not for the entirety of their lifetimes, such as for myself, I know I'm, you know, on the younger side, right? So, like, yeah, like, yes. And, you know, grew up with a lot of anti-smoking ads. So, again, we know that that's not so good. But there's also the question of, like, once you're addicted, right? I'm addicted, that's why. So here, this is a, based on the position paper of the RCA, which is organized by his local chairman, Rabbi Asher Bush, currently who is a community rabbi in New York, as well as a rabbi at the Yeshiva Frisch. So he writes, this is quoting from his article, because it's simply easier to quote his article than because he translated the Chafetz Chaim and Rav Oldenburg had quoted the Chafetz Chaim. So approximately 100 years ago, meaning again, early 1900s, the Chafetz Chaim expressed his dismay that many weak people smoked, even though doctors clearly told them that it was a great risk to their health. This is, just to explain, this is people who were physically weak, because at that time they knew that if you're physically weak and you smoked, it might kill you. So he notes that on many occasions he spoke with these smokers and often receiving the same response, that they would love to quit, but they're addicted. To this, the Chafetz Chaim would respond, "Whoever permitted you to get yourself addicted in the first place?" While it is certainly true that the Chafetz Chaim was only commenting on weak people, meaning physically weak people, Rav Oldenburg, again, the two we quoted earlier, emphatically states that given our medical knowledge, all people are in this category, and the ruling of the Chafetz Chaim for the physically weak people clearly applies to all people. Right, so as before, we may have, you know, debated, yes, no, maybe, but we can't hide behind that at this point, right?
So I have a question.
Yeah.
So if I've been eating cheeseburgers my whole life and I'm too weak to give it up, I just can't do it.
Clarification. I'll put that right there, Mark. Sorry. When he's saying weak, this is not referring to, you know, I don't have the weak people here are the physically weak people. The people, when the words of Chafetz Chaim, they're referring to those who lack willpower. It's saying those who are physically weak. The Rav Oldenburg says that nowadays, because it's a bad idea for everyone, it would apply equally to everybody. But is that again, breaking habits and addictions is very difficult. So, but that is not to say that you wouldn't recommend somebody to do so, because if somebody's addicted in general, they should be getting help. And any unhealthy addiction, or addiction by definition, are unhealthy. But again, that's more of a, yeah, I realize I'm going in circles a bit. But again, so it's not to state that somebody who is addicted is weak. It's simply stating that everybody's considered to be weak in regards to the potential addiction of smoking, just like back in the day, they'd say somebody who is physically weak, who smoked, they might end up dying from it. So it's nowadays, because we are all able to become addicted, we're all considered to be equally weak in the face of cigarettes and its potential dangers to ourselves. Yes.
Well, was the Chafetz Chaim making a distinction between psychologically weak or physically weak people?
He was referring to physically weak people, not psychologically weak. He was stating that to those who are weak, who came and saying, look, I know I shouldn't, but I can't. So his response was, again, but like, why did you start is part of the, and now that you're in this situation, you need to figure out your way out of it, right? Because what you're currently doing is killing yourself, albeit slowly, but you need to figure out how to stop. Right? That was the context of when Chafetz Chaim was asked that. But nowadays, right, when we all know that it's dangerous and that it can cause detrimental health effects, so we were all in the same category as when the Chafetz Chaim was talking to those people over 100 years ago. We now fall into that same category. every individual is considered to be at risk of that as well. Right. So also again, not, I don't have, it didn't write down here, but again, Usher Weiss, so it says that, explanation is, of the prohibition is necessarily that you can, you point to saying this cigarette is what's going to hurt you, because this first cigarette is not necessarily sufficiently bad. It's no worse than, you know, maybe worse than having an unhealthy hamburger, but it's different than, but the different difference is that it's not, very rarely is it a cigarette. Because the nature of addiction is you don't want to get put into a circumstance of addiction, because that'll lead very easily down the line to the far more addictive case, and which will certainly lead to health issues. Even if this particular one won't, overall, cumulatively, we can't pretend that we view each of them separately, because as we all know, that's just simply intellectually dishonest. Because as we know from, you know, repetitive trauma and works, I believe there definitely are actual doctors on the Zoom. So again, if I am incorrect, please correct me. But again, that is the case. You can't view it as being, it's not dangerous because of this one time, but in general, we would say that it is problematic. So the next argument that was put forth is, I can, you know, that people will say is, but yeah, but it's this addiction or another addiction. So true. Right. We do have, and halakha does exist, the idea that, you know, choosing between a certain circumstance, you know, you should do the lesser of the evil. Let's say in terms of, say, if you're trying to, you know, let's say save somebody's life, or there's an option between, you know, let's say feeding them, you know, there's, let's say, a, you know, there, let's say one option to heal somebody is feed them pork. The other one is to give them a not kosher pill. Right. So then the not kosher pill is less bad than eating not kosher pork is. And therefore, you would choose one over the other, because one's a lesser evil and both are bad. But here, that's basically a false pretense, because who's to say that you were necessarily going to end up being in that situation? If you will definitively have had to choose this vice, this bad thing, or that bad thing, right? Everybody here, I presume, believes in, right? People believe in free will, right? Your choice, you have choices to your actions. No matter how great a, you know, I have a disposition towards this, I associate my sociological factors towards this, ultimately, we all do still have something, we do have free will. So to say that I was forced into this decision, and therefore I had to choose this or that, is very rarely does that actually, a person may say it, but to intellectually believe that is a very hard thing to actually say, because it doesn't necessarily line up. Okay, and then the last point is the question of statistics. Some would say, oh, it's not that dangerous. It's not so bad. Does it really hurt? So yes, well, an individual cigarette might not, but the overall effect of many cigarettes does. And even an individual cigarette, as in to somebody who's not been smoking, they will immediately start coughing, gagging, lightheadedness, nausea, and other things just from their first puff on a cigarette. So, and as far as the overall statistics, again, in terms of the number of people who die, whether it be from lung cancer, mouth cancer, heart disease, etc., because of smoking, and the fact that the average smoker's lifespan is reduced by around 20 years because they smoke. So it is very difficult to say that these statistics are, oh, this is not a significant amount. This is a very significant amount. And in case some people also heard the argument, yeah, but how is it different than, let's say, eating not healthy, right? How is it any worse than, you know, my eating, you know, way too much candy? So the difference is that if you eat too much candy, generally, if you have a candy, it is not going to be to cause any degree of long-term harm. If you had, let's say somebody had every day for breakfast a Snickers, right? Or insert favorite candy of choice. Would we say that's the most healthy thing? No. But would it lead to any long-term medical damage? Answer is not the slightest bit. True, if you were to have, you know, eaten, you know, like mountains of candy, that might be dangerous. But there is a entirely permissible way of doing so where an individual one is actually beneficial to your health, whereas for smoking, that is not the case. Again, if it was to be, you know, medically recommended, like as a medical treatment, that'd be a different story. But for that, that'll be more of an issue that we'll discuss a little bit in terms of next week, in terms of marijuana, in terms of the, both in terms of the recreational and medical usage. But for now, suffice to say, statistics in regards to tobacco specifically and its rate of carcinogens and ability to kill people is terrifying, horrifying, and extremely large. So now, just to give a quick, again, to go over again, what we've covered. So we've discovered, we went through a little bit of the history of smoking, both in terms of, and the world at large, as well as within the Jewish community, when it was accepted, not accepted, based on erroneous medical information. And once it became more known, why it ended, we ended up saying why almost everybody, again, now, again, all posts nowadays say you should not be smoking. And again, even those who say that once you're addicted, you might be able to continue. That was Moshe Feinstein, and that was relating to those who got addicted when they didn't know better. But nowadays, there are very people there, because it's been 40 years or so, there are very people currently who are still falling into that category. We discussed the question of why people smoke, some of the sociological factors, as well as some of the, of other reasons why it might encourage people to smoke. Well, they may not be good reasons. Those still are reasons. We also discussed the reasons of behind why it's prohibited, the primary one being endangering and damaging yourself and those around you, right? That's the primary one. Then we discussed all the ancillary reasons people give as to why, yeah, but, and we systematically explained why all of them are problematic. And as far, again, not to say that it's completely understandable how somebody may have joined at some point and may have started smoking, but it doesn't mean that the excuse of saying, but I'm already doing so, therefore I don't need to worry about it. We've discussed how that isn't necessarily a fair statement, and it's actually, in fact, dangerous to say so. And again, the local consensus is it is prohibited to smoke cigarettes. If you could find me a living rabbi who would recommend it, I'm happy to discuss it with you further. But again, I could quote you many rabbis, living and dead, as I already have, who prohibit it. For very good reason. If you were looking to have some, right, so again, for a closing note though, we got to know this came up earlier, so it's again important to emphasize. This is again Rabbi Osher Bush's conclusion. Again, I used his article for a lot of this, that this analysis must lead to the unambiguous conclusion that smoking is clearly and unquestionably prohibited by halakha, and that this should be made known to all those who care about Torah and their health. Final note is in order. People who smoke are not, chas v'shalom, doing so in an attempt to flout halakha. In fact, most who would dearly wish to quit, but shedding an addiction is no simple matter. While it is important to make clear that halakha prohibits smoking, it is also important not to condemn those who struggle with this issue. Rather, we must offer our full help and support to aid them in their quest for physical and spiritual health. All right, so if somebody is struggling with addiction of any sort, particularly in regards to smoking, which is a very hard one to beat, again, important to make sure everybody gets proper help and not faulted for doing so. But on the other hand, it does not mean that to turn a blind eye and say it's okay is also something that we cannot conscience or do. Again, if you're interested in looking into some more sources, so two English articles that I found very helpful there's an article by Rabbi Chaim Jafter in Gray Matter on the prohibition to smoke, as well as the position paper of the RCA formulated by Rabbi Asher Bush, as well as there's also the Encyclopedia Rafuit in Hebrew, or the Encyclopedia of Medical Concepts, which is the English translation of it, which is a shorter version than the Hebrew one, but again, also has a good compilation of the sources and the history. Again, as well as a quick Google search will bring you to these other sites as well that also are very helpful in regards to giving some more information. And last but not least, I want to thank everybody for coming out tonight. Reminding everybody that next week we will be hopefully discussing hallucinogens and cannabis. So if anybody has any questions about that, feel free to send them in advance. The way I can make sure that I have sufficiently prepared for your questions. Or if not, feel free to. I posted a link to sign up in the chat in case you would like to sign up. So I can email you with the recording afterwards if you missed something, want to go over it, or in case you'd like to get some email reminders about next week.
I have a comment and a question. I think summarizing from what you said, if I understand correctly, there basically is no rational justification for why it's happening aside from it happens, it's tolerated. Maybe we're walking in the footsteps of current Rosh Yeshiva, and if they're doing it, it must be okay. I mean, you knock down every argument. I don't really see any justification.
Correct. Justification is that it is a very hard habit to break. It is highly addictive.
No, but no.
What do you mean? As in, generating the young people get involved.
People
it's not
now there are people smoking now who were born in the year 2000. So we're not talking about breaking.
Right. So for them, right, it's not based on their following any particular tradition. It's that the sociological pressures involved, right, are still immense even nowadays, right? And nicotine is that addictive. So, and also again,
there's many sociological things that Judaism does not tolerate, you know, absolutely not.
I'm agreeing. I'm saying the issue isn't in the general population as well, like where it's illegal for, as I mentioned, it is in almost every single modernized country, it is illegal for minors to smoke. Right. And it's illegal for them to buy, own, etc. But when do most people end up starting to smoke? When they are below legal age and they get addicted at that point. What still ends up causing people to start smoking is, again, the social pressures, the initial start, and then the addiction following them through afterwards. Fault of that is advertising of smoking companies, as well as in general media, of it being a potentially cool thing to do, as well, again, and as well as I mentioned before, some people said that, oh, you know, I'm going to do this as opposed to something else bad. You know, like, I'm going to do something bad today. How should I rebel? Right. You know, like, so instead, what am I going to choose? You know, instead of going to the movies, my rabbi said I shouldn't go to the movies. So he also said I shouldn't smoke. But I've seen other yeshiva guys smoke. So smoking is better than movies, right? And then that, and they choose that as their poison, which is a terrible, terrible choice. But that is the rationale in their heads.
My second point is, and this goes to next week, that speaking as somebody who has never smoked cigarettes, nor cannabis, nor weed, or anything like that, I think it's the height of hypocrisy that neither is without their dangers, but tobacco certainly causes a lot more damage.
Correct. So next week we'll discuss the question of, again, a lot of it does relate to what is the medical information about it. So there's a lot of interesting facts about the history of cannabis and its usage that is relevant to discuss. But again, that'll be for next week. So I was going to say that even when it is medically prohibited and also prohibited and legally prohibited, that does not stop people from being stupid. So that is why it will always still occur, no matter. I mean, yeah. People are really good at doing bad things. So that's, yeah, unfortunately, the case. Okay.